grab your bridges and turn up your interweb. Solving the world's problems 12 ounces at a time. It's Dudes and Beer.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome to episode 219 of the Dudes and Beer podcast, now officially brought to you by Amazon's Audible. If you're a fan of books and knowledge like me, just don't have time to turn the page, check out Amazon Audible. That's audibletrials.com/dudes to get your 30-day free trial of Amazon's Audible. You'll guaranteed love it. You get two free books. You can return books if you don't like them and get your money back or trade them in for another. So go on by audibletrial.com/dudes today to get your 30-day free trial. Once again, that is audibletrial.com/dudes. Tonight on the show, we have a very, very special guest, folks. For many of y'all that have been listening for the whole run of this show, you may know one of my dirty secrets in life is that my first year in college I spent studying in the seminary for the Roman Catholic Church. Our guest tonight is probably one of the most revered people we've ever had on this program, at least to me spiritually. And our guest tonight is Archbishop James Cloud, demonologist and exorcist, Archbishop of the Northwest in Advent International Catholic Church, as well as Bishop Exorcist of the Sacred Order of St. Michael the Archangel, and author of the book Walking with Ghosts, an exorcist memoir of the paranormal. Welcome so much to the show, James Cloud. How are you today? Are you still there, James? Hello? Oh, there he is. Sorry about that. Go ahead, James.
Oh, okay, good. Hey, how's it going?
Doing great, man. Welcome to the show. And we, of course, have the joyous sound of children in the background. I am not somebody. I actually had somebody comment on one of my episodes one time, like, what's up with the baby crying in the background? It's probably the only comment I've ever commented back on. And I was like, that's my 2-year-old son, you monster. Feel free to not tune in if you don't want. Like, dude, I have a 2-year-old, man. Like, I can control when a 2-year-old decides to be upset and cry. You know, like, to me, That is the joyful noise being raised unto the Lord, is the sound of children playing, the sound of, you know, children screaming, just doing what kids do. So don't you be ashamed of that sound in the background one bit tonight, James Cloud.
Sounds good. I won't.
And we will be getting into some actual sounds that should disturb you folks here in a little while. First, I want James to share with us a little bit about his journey. Number one, how was it that you came into service of your Lord to begin with? I'm always interested to hear people's backstory, how they came to their chosen call in life, how they came to their chosen vocation. Especially when it is a spiritual vocation such as yours, much less the vocation of exorcist. So please do share with us, James.
Definitely. Well, my journey began under my father's teaching as a Pentecostal minister. He was a Vietnam vet, had 100% service-connected PTSD. But he was fully dedicated to Christ, and he taught me everything I needed to know about doctrine, theology. Of course, I went to Bible college too. It was a interesting journey, and really I went on my first exorcism / deliverance case at age 18.
Oh, wow.
And, was assisting my dad in those. And then I went into the Church of England, Anglican Church. And after years of study and whatnot, became a deacon, then a priest. And now I was, then, well, 2 years ago, I was consecrated an Anglican bishop, Church of England. And then they actually told me to stop being an exorcist. Otherwise, they wouldn't have anything to do with me.
Sure, sure. And mm-hmm. that was something that we were talking about off air before the show, because I know a couple people that have at least tried to go down the path of exorcism, things like that. And it's
sure.
And granted, that's in the Roman Catholic Church. And like I said, in the Catholic Church, that's all done under the seal of exorcism. So there's a reason why there's a reticence to talk about it. But
sure.
not necessarily so in the Anglican Church, not necessarily so in other churches. And I was asked the question earlier today by a spiritual warrior that I know that was like, hey, are exorcisms only Catholic? Are they only Christian? And I was like, oh, God, no. Like, cultures have been practicing exorcism since they started looking to something beyond themselves to answer the questions, people. Since then, we've had the fear of the dark, the fear of evil, the fear of something watching over us and lording over us that we cannot control.
Absolutely.
And the answer is no. They are not exclusive to the Christian faith. That's a big misconception. But the greater chunk of exorcisms actually take place outside the Christian faith. Within those faiths that use that, even Islam has cases of exorcism and that kind of stuff. So even they have
absolutely
exorcists.
And with the Jews, it goes back thousands of years.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And
I mean, you can look at the Day of Atonement in the Jewish faith. It was an exorcism of the entire people of Israel with the scapegoat.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And let's go a little bit, because you were saying that you were asked to please stop performing exorcisms or else you would be defrocked, deowned by the Episcopal Church. Go into that a little bit more.
Sure. Well, I had been doing exorcisms, like I said, really since the age of 18. When I assisted my father, and it never really stopped. I would periodically do exorcisms with folks that really needed it. And that didn't change when I went into the Anglican Church. And so my presiding bishop at the time, while I was a parish priest, he had called me his dragon slayer. And he was very proud of the fact that, I was an exorcist and I assisted people. Well, politics got in the way when other bishops came on board, and those bishops didn't even believe in the devil, much less exorcisms. So for them, the idea of, being associated with those type of people, quote unquote, was something that they didn't wish to do. And so in order to make the peace with the Greater College of Bishops, they asked me to stop performing the exorcisms. And I was pretty blunt in my response, and I was a bishop at this time. And so I was part of the College of Bishops.
All right.
And I told them, I said, don't you realize that Christ's own ministry was about 2/3 exorcism, guys?
Yeah. Yeah.
He was casting out demons, casting out spirits of illness and mental infirmities and everything else.
Yeah, that was one of the only things that was actually bestowed upon the disciples. The gifts that were bestowed upon the disciples by the Holy Spirit at the time of Pentecost. Like you'll be able to do this. And one of them was cast out spirits.
Yep. Cast out spirits.
That is what separated them from the average Jewish man or the average Gentile.
Yep.
Nothing more.
Absolutely.
Nothing more. That they had this direct line communication to the other side.
Yep. Yep. And so I said, we had a mutual agreement that I would say, see ya. And I joined the Orthodox Church.
Okay.
And their history of exorcisms go back thousands of years.
Yes.
Or, 2000 at least. But so I joined them. I'm part of the Advent International Catholic Church, which is a Western Rite Orthodox.
Yep.
And I'm currently the superior now for their order of exorcists.
Okay.
So I have a couple demonologists and an exorcist under me.
Well, and explain
and so I'm kind of where the buck stops.
Yeah, yeah. You're exactly where the buck stops. You're the one that now decides, yes, we have met the criteria necessary for exorcism. And a lot of people don't realize that. At least in most branches of the Catholic Church, that before an exorcism goes on, there are numerous signs that you're looking for.
Absolutely.
Go through some of those for us, because I know I've got my handy Roman ritual right here with me. Oddly enough, the only book that my child reaches for and actively tries to play with on the shelf of hundreds of books is the Roman ritual. And it's like, all right, that's pretty cool. I like the kid. He may have
absolutely
a vocation later. So
maybe, never know.
Go into some of it, because Father Malachi Martin was very clear about the fact in his teachings and his writings that there is a state of obsession that is reached because before possession. And he was like, this is normally where you'll see people in your family who are horribly addicted to drugs, doing things that are uncharacteristically them. He was like, they have sacrificed their free will and their ability to say no in order to attain that which they wanted. They are now obsessed by a spirit. They are embodied by it, and they have given over control in order to attain whatever they want. He was like, it frightens me to walk down the street and see the blank, vacant eyes of the obsessed, and know that they are all half step in, half step out of the other world. And that's what people don't realize. The Exorcist is one of my favorite movies, hands down, of all time. The main reason why it was banned by the Catholic Church wasn't necessarily the content, but it was straight up the content. It was the fact that, like, the words that came out of the priest's mouth were pretty much verbatim the Roman ritual. I've done it with people I don't know how many times, because I've got a pre-Vatican I Roman ritual where it's Latin on the left, English on the right, or pre-Vatican II.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
And we go through it, and they're like, oh, my God. I'm like, yeah, this is why. Like, this is done under the seal of confession. Most people aren't supposed to know about this. So, they shut it down and said you shouldn't watch this. But what are, and they go through a few of the signs there, and at least thankfully show the fact that they've gone through extensive psychological testing. Go into the some of the means by which that y'all cipher whether or not somebody is obsessed or possessed by a demon.
Okay. Well, right out the gate, I'm also a mental health therapist as well as a drug and alcohol counselor. And I do mental health assessments and drug abuse assessments all the time. So for me, they've got kind of a 3-in-1 specialist. You know, I can differentiate, is this a substance-induced psychosis from methamphetamine use or some other hallucinogenic or psychotic active drug or anything like that? And of course, withdrawal and whatever else can produce psychoses. So I actively do substance abuse assessments and as well as mental health assessments on the individuals that I usually do an exorcism on, so that can be assured that they don't meet criterion for the explainable thing. And now we can look at the unexplainable.
Yeah, precisely. You want to look at the what's there, what's physical, what you can touch. You know, not that there are a whole lot of actual cases of split personality disorder, you know, but you want to explore that as an option. You know, you at least got to go down the checklist to see if that's even an option as a diagnosis, you know?
Absolutely.
So it's not like people go in to like a weekend clinic, you know, and see somebody for a couple hours for an initial check, and they're like, nope, no demon here. See ya, folks. This is an ongoing treatment that somebody, like, walk us through the process here, James, because it's one of those that it's going to vary from person to person, but there's very much a process that I'm sure everybody goes through. It's the same thing like when I worked with Lone Star Spirits to hear people's tales of hauntings in their home. Everybody had a common thread. So what is the typical rundown of what happens and how you come to be involved with the situation?
Well, I will typically get a case in, and I've got two or three sitting in my email now requesting assistance. But I'll first, you know, run down the litmus test of substance use, and then look at more, broaden it out from there to look at any mental health issues that might be there. A lot of times people will report hearing voices in their home or something else. And I usually ask them, I said, well, is it outside of your head or is it inside your head? Because if it's inside their head, then it's a what we would call a rumination or a negative self-talk versus, you know, a demon is actively talking to them in their house and whatnot.
Yeah.
But if the voice is outside of their head, that leans to either being schizophrenia or some other psychotic disorder, or it also leads potentiality for legitimate things going on. So that's one of those things about the differentiation on that. My son.
Well,
and my daughter is having an accident.
Define for our audience, because everybody is, of course, familiar with the idea of exorcist.
Sure.
Not everybody is familiar with the title of demonologist. And exactly what a demonologist does. A lot of people would immediately jump into the realm of, you know, looking for an Egon Stans, you know, maybe pulling out their Tobin spirit guide, something like that. But in all sincerity, like it's one of the most interesting traditions in religion that there is. And there's a branch of demonology in almost every major branch of religion. So go ahead and explain to us what demonology is and how you, we know how you got into exorcism by helping your father, but how did you get into the study particularly of demonology? How did you start following that path?
Well, my dad was instrumental in that as well. He was in the United States Marine Corps. He was a forward observer in Vietnam. And he always told me that in combat, one needs to understand the enemy, know who they're fighting, why they're fighting. And so it's the same thing. The reason I got into demonology was to understand the enemy, their tactics, their behaviors, their motives, their patterns, and to identify any prominent members of the enemy's staff, shall we say. And so I began my studies with the church at that time. I had a mentor that was talking to me, leading me, showing me different texts and methods of understanding that helped me to be able to identify what type of spirit that I was looking at or coming against or fighting.
And that makes absolute and total sense, because not all of the possession that occurs is necessary a demoniac possession. Like I said earlier, Father Malachi Martin even said most of them are minor spirits, things like that, entities that we have even created throughout our life, that follow us, that we feed negative energy to. And it's wild to think about, but it's absolutely true. And if you think about it, you can think about those people that just, my mom used to describe me about how it was, she was like, you just always had this dark cloud hanging over you, and I couldn't wait till the day that the sun shined in, and that dark cloud disappeared from over my child. And she was like, I had no idea what it was, but I knew that it was something that was just following you, that I couldn't do anything about. I'd raised you to the best of my abilities, you know. And let's talk a little bit about this concept of spiritual possession, how people go about forfeiting their free will to the spiritual. And the roads that can lead down, because much like an addiction therapist, which you are as well, would tell any client, like once you're out of therapy, Jerry Garcia said it best. I was born an addict and I'm going to die an addict. The only difference is whether I choose to use today. And you really do have to adopt that attitude. You really have to remember on the daily when you wake up, I'm an addict and I'm not going to use today. You know, and that has to be your attitude on the daily, every day. You can't forget it. Otherwise, you might relapse. And the same is very, very much true. If you have been possessed and have been cleared, you need to get right with whatever you call God real quick. And be real friendly real quick. So let's get into a little bit about that, about how... it's kind of that concept in Lost Boys of you have to open the window for the vampire to come in. I think there's a big misunderstanding where people are like, oh, well, you know, I don't believe in demons, so I can't be possessed. Well, you know, let's talk about that.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. Let's talk about that misled concept. Okay.
Yeah.
Cause that's dangerous. Absolutely. That's straight up dangerous. I can literally think of no more dangerous mentality.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
Well, it's like, with that mentality, honestly, it's like, I like to put it in terms of a battlefield. You know, if you believe the enemy isn't there, well, you just, you know, march and shake your hips and have a good time with, you know, fiddling with your gun because the enemy isn't there. All the while a sniper has you in his sights, and you'll be taken down because the lack of belief makes you even more vulnerable than having a mediocre faith. Because you're walking in the battlefield totally blind. You don't know who the enemy is, what their tactics are. You don't even believe that they're there.
Yeah. That's just it. Your lack of conviction and belief does not prove, or does not disprove existence. You know, your lack of belief does not disprove existence. Like, it doesn't mean that thing doesn't exist just because you don't believe in it.
Sure.
A lot of people once believed that the world was flat for thousands of years. Sure. As a matter of fact, to say otherwise, we'd burn you at the stake.
Sure. Heresy.
It was heresy, straight up, to teach otherwise. If you were teaching it at school that the earth was round and Magellan was right, we'd burn you. you know, like how quickly things change. We're to the point of the flip side of the coin where so much of the world is not of spiritual basis, I should say religious basis, because I try and tie a pretty strong bridge between the two, but separate them always. The two are not necessarily the same. I know many, many spiritual people that are not religious, do not go to a church. I have no fear whatsoever about them being attacked spiritually or anything like that. They would be ninja enough to feel mm-hmm. that in a heartbeat. So, but
yeah.
What starts that process of surrender to the other side? The process of beginning to circle the drain.
Well, the process really begins with the penultimate sin of pride. It is pride was the first sin, and all other sin can trace its roots right back to pride. So the way that the person starts circling that drain is they do the exact opposite of Christ in the garden. They say, "Not your will, but mine be done." And at that moment, when they figuratively give God the finger,
yeah,
and say, I'm the God of my own life. I'm going to run my life my way. There is no higher power. You know, we're basically evolved apes that dropped out of a tree, lost our tail, and you know, ran through the Serengeti at some point.
Yeah.
You know, they just say this life is mine. Not even any creator or architect or anything that designed everything, which, by the way, most scientists are moving toward not belief, but at least they're becoming agnostic or deist because of the fine tuning of the universe. But that's a side note. But the thing is, when a person believes that their way is better than anyone or anything else, which is a pretty common thing to hear in modern society, it opens that door. And like we were talking about drug use earlier, well, the original Greek word for drugs is pharmakeia, for sorcery.
Yes.
For sorcery, it's pharmakeia, where we get our word pharmacy and drug use. So drug abuse is actually the sin of sorcery. And so the old magicians, the old soothsayers and whatnot, they were always popped off on something to give them a vision.
Yeah, yeah, always.
And that's how they were able to communicate to the spirits.
Belladonna, mushrooms.
Yeah. And that's sorcery.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
Expanding our minds, man.
Wow. I had never made that bridge. And I am somebody I'm not going to say I don't partake in some marijuana here and there, you know.
Sure.
Hell, I host a show called Dudes and Beer, so I obviously have a beer or two. First miracle, sure. You know, what am I going to deny? Am I going to deny the water to wine? Come on. But I used hard things. I went down a different road for a little while in life, and I definitely surrendered that. And there's a part of me that I have not necessarily been able to recover since. But yeah, wow. I had never put it into the realm of sorcery with the ease with which you just did. Like, that wasn't even like one of those brain puzzles where there's one piece missing and you have to move it around, man. You just popped it right in. Absolutely.
It's simply a matter of translating into modern language.
Yeah. And that would be like, right up there with, that's pretty mm-hmm. hardcore sin.
It is.
Wowzers.
And most aren't aware of it.
Yeah.
Because it's either most folks don't do their language studies or they just don't know the history.
Sure.
You know, I don't think anyone's purposely keeping the secret about that.
But, yeah, I don't think so either.
It's just not known.
Yeah.
And it's not taught by religious leaders or anything.
Well, and I definitely, we regularly have Byron Birkhammer on this show. He's our psychedelic correspondent, and treats people with Ibogaine for extreme opioid addiction, that kind of stuff, and has a vast realm of knowledge. And like we've said many times on the show, the problem is people have lost the reverence and the concept of using that for the sacred. Somewhere along the line, mushrooms became a party drug. Somewhere along the line, ketamine became a party drug. It got away from us, and now it took 20-plus years to get a ketamine nasal spray for general depression, you know, for extreme cases of depression, because something was used for something else, got a horrible name, and got banned with a bunch of other stuff. So, yeah, it's wild to even make that connection. But that is definitely one of the ways in which we surrender control.
Absolutely.
We at least weaken our hold on control a little bit. And I know that sounds kind of egotistical to say, but it's definitely a situation of us being in control of the situation, correct?
I'm sorry, my daughter was screaming.
That's all right. I know it sounds egotistical to talk about control and controlling this kind of situation, but ultimately we are the ones that have the control, despite anything any demon says to you, or tries to convince you to do, in any way, shape, or form, that demon might take. Let's get into one of the clips here real quick and talk about the forms that these demons can take. James, you sent me a few clips tonight. The one that I want to talk about is EVP captured from a recent house cleansing where the spirit says, "I'll kill you." And I've actually got the clip itself. I'll play it a couple of times, and then I'll play the isolated, "I'll kill you." I've actually gone through and boosted these clips a little bit. There was some background noise because these things are done with little palm quarters, folks. Not the best of technology, but tried and true in those situations. Let's go ahead and check out the first clip here, and then we can talk about it.
And do that. Oh, it's cute.
Yeah, he'll come through and bless it. And,
And do that. Oh, it's cute.
Yeah, he'll come through and bless it.
And you can hear it right in the background. Right in the background, it sounds like somebody talking right at the beginning if you listen to it again.
And do that. Oh, it's cute.
Yeah, he'll come through and bless it.
And here is that audio isolated and pumped up a little bit.
Oh, it's cute.
Yeah.
Oh, it's cute.
Yeah.
Oh, it's cute.
Yeah.
Oh, it's cute.
Yeah.
And that's just disturbing. Because it was definitely not part of the conversation or anything like that. What is it like? Because that's a voice that y'all discover after the fact, after you're going through footage and things like that, correct? Are you still there, James?
No worries. That one was an incubus case that I did about 5 years ago.
Okay.
And that was actually caught. I wasn't doing the ride, nothing. I wasn't exercising. I was simply walking through and getting a feel of the property.
Sure.
And on the video piece, you can see us exiting through the basement door. And on review, that stood out like a sore thumb, that it had been threatening me. And we had just come from a reported hot spot in the room, in the home, I mean.
Oh, wow. Yeah, and
it was basically just letting me know it didn't like me.
Yeah, exactly. Like making itself present and there. There was another one that you sent, EVP4, Satan. And let's check that out real quick.
Are you afraid to tell us who you are?
Thank you.
Are you afraid to tell us who you are?
And there's just a loud roar at the end. You can hear the ghost detector going off in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And right there, it's just a large roaring sound coming out.
Yeah.
What are some of the different forms? You were just talking about an incubus case. Explain some of these different forms of embodiment by spirits and demons.
Sure. Well, an incubus is a male sex demon. In this case, the woman had been a survivor of sex abuse in her younger days. And so her husband knew not to touch her in certain ways without triggering her. So she was laying in bed one night, and this entity grabbed her hips, and it spun her around, and it immediately thrust itself upon her, and it was staring at her. And as she described it, it had long, black, just matted hair off of its head. It had yellow eyes, and it had these horribly long fangs as it was looking at her. And this woman was a marginal Christian. I don't know how closely she followed her faith, but she knew well enough to say, "I rebuke you in Jesus' name." And immediately it shot out of the room and left her alone. And so I've also worked succubus cases where it's a female sex demon that is tormenting a male in the home. I had a case about, I guess it had been slightly over a year ago. And actually this case is on YouTube. It was a different YouTube channel that had asked me to come down and help. And in this case, the young girl had an invisible friend, and its name was Citri.
Oh.
And I thought, well, that's an interesting name.
Just like Captain Howdy in The Exorcist.
Kinda. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the mother was being held down in bed and raped. The husband was being held down and masturbated against his will by this thing, as well as they were both being beaten and scratched and everything else. And so I was called down, and so I did research. I'm like, Citri, that is a weird name. So I looked it up, and Citri, I don't recall the exact rank, but it was like a Duke of Hell that masquerades as both an incubus and a succubus. And it had little underlings with it as well in the house. The two YouTubers that came with me, they both got possessed, and I had to exorcise them because they were in it for fun or whatever. And well, it got them. And so I got it off of them, and they went out, threw up, and it was golden after that. But other forms that these things take, it can be the real ghastly forms that you see on, you would think it was like a horror movie. You know, they have long spindly arms, or might be shadow people. Shadow people are probably the most common, with or without the fedora hat. And with or without the red eyes, it just depends.
Yeah.
It's just a myriad of shapes and manifestations. A lot of times it can just be a black mass that's in the home or around a person or whatnot. But each one has its own personality, its own characteristics. But I actually commented to my wife after a most recent exorcism that I did about 2 weeks ago. I said, you know, it's funny. For all the puff and bluster that these little Looney Tunes have, they all do the exact same thing. They try to intimidate. They try to say, oh, I'm a big guy.
Yeah, they're like a bill collector with a script. Okay, big man. Exactly. Okay, big man, get off your script. What are you going to do now? You know?
Exactly.
Like, you can't really describe it any better. It's much the same way, you know, once you up that BS meter, you're not going to get sold again. You just have to be willing to up your BS meter and admit the fact that, like, you were the one that wasn't ready for that. And you've got to kind of, like you said, walk around like a soldier in the field, always with one eye open.
Absolutely.
You know, you don't have to walk around with an entourage of exorcists and everything, but simply knowing that you yourself are protected as long as you don't invite it into your life. As long as you don't empower it. Sure, it may try to bump you every now and then and poke you and prod at you, but just don't give it any credence. You know, it's strange, but
absolutely.
And those that have been affected, like we were saying, those that have gone to the point of possession, that's a totally different story. Obsession, you can easily flip around before it becomes possession. You can help somebody find a path away from what they were doing that led down that road. But once it gets to the point of possession, that's where we have the case, excuse me, like you were just saying about the house with the entity in it, because some kid had an invisible friend. How does that start affecting the life infecting the life of the people that are there and around it? Are you still there, James?
Oh, I'm sorry. I hit mute button every now and then because of the squeal
right.
over here.
That's all right.
Now, one of the prime ways that people begin to get affected in their life is the most common route that I have personally seen is there'll be depression. People will start to isolate. The personality will change. Usually they have a flip switch for anger. Anger seems to be, the hallmark of these things. A person might then think, I've heard it from so many people, I'm going crazy and, I'm not insane. This is happening and that's happening. And so they get isolated from their family, friends, and whatever. Because they're experiencing these things, don't know how to explain it, so their family and friends write them off as just being grumpy or manic depressive, quote unquote, or something, and they're just left alone. And but that's one of the tactics of the enemy, is to isolate a person, to make them feel alone, so that then they can really start playing with the mind.
Yeah.
And it just kind of festers like a wound from there until that oppression or obsession takes hold, and then it has the potential to go to possession, either imperfect or perfect.
And what is the difference between those?
An imperfect possession, the individual still maintains grasp on reality. They're lucid, they're able to go about their daily business, but at other times, the entity, the demon itself, takes control, and they lose time, they act in behavioral ways that is opposite of their personality. Once gentle person becomes incredibly angry, mean, resentful, And then it just flips back and forth. And then the perfect possession, the poor victim is stuck with this demon controlling their behaviors, thoughts, words, deeds, everything, because they've either given up or have just said, well, fine. No one believes me anyway. No one cares enough to take care of me or anything else.
Yeah.
And of course, you got this demon harping in their ear that they're worthless, no one cares, the whole shebang, and then the perfect possession occurs.
Yeah. And that's when things really start getting frightening. That's when that's when you really start facing spirit to spiritual warrior. You said, the victim is not even part of the equation. They're just a physical conduit at that point.
Absolutely.
Frequently beaten.
It's like they're in a coma.
Yeah. Yeah. And explain what some of that is like, being in that environment.
As the exorcist or from the victim standpoint?
As the exorcist, as somebody okay. who, because sure, I mean, you just like any soldier, yeah, you know, you're going out on another mission, but there's always the things in the back of the mind. There's always the what ifs, the making sure that you are ready. What are the things that you have to go through before conferring the right on somebody?
Well, I usually do a 2 to 3 day fast before the right. I'm in confession. I'm in prayers. I especially love the Chaplet of Divine Mercy because I'm pleading the blood of Christ over my humanity, because I'm far from a perfect human being and I need mercy and forgiveness just like the next Joe Schmo.
Yes.
But by mentally and spiritually preparing myself for that, I'm then in a better state spiritually to identify, understand, and to take direct command of the demon itself. You know, there was a passage in the Gospels where the disciples were trying to cast out demons and they were unable to. And Christ came up and they started whining about their inability to cast out a demon. And he said, "You of little faith, don't you know that some can't even come out without prayer and fasting?" And Christ spoke and the demoniac was cured. So I pretty much take my cues both from tradition and from Christ himself. If he says, hey, some don't come out except with fasting added into the prayers, then I make sure I pray and fast for every one of them, even if they're a, you know, a buck private or if they're a 3-star general. Either way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm covered.
It's preparing yourself as well. There are steps
Absolutely.
To doing that. There are steps to preparing yourself and to getting ready.
Oh, absolutely.
For that. So,
and the biggest thing is to get myself out of the way.
Yes.
You know, I did an exorcism 2 weeks ago, an imperfect possession. And my exorcism team and I were talking and I said, you know, the biggest thing that I can do as an exorcist, as a bishop, as a Christian even, is to get myself out of the way. My pride, anything that I may think I'm doing needs to be out of the way. Any power I think I have needs to be out of the way. Simply because the biggest thing is pride, even in a sliver within me, can become a point of attack by the enemy.
Yes.
And so I make sure that, you know, I'm covered, I'm doing the best I can, and I let mercy and grace do the rest to cover myself. my sins, my humanity, so that Christ can come through. And I'm just the hammer, the screwdriver, whatever that tool that he uses to do what he needs to do.
Well, and that being said, it is, of course, yeah, like in any Christian can baptize somebody, can it just anybody perform an exorcism? Should anybody perform an exorcism? Like I've got the rite of exorcism. It says in red and squiggly writing before everything what to do to get ready, you know. It's a manual in my hand. That's
sure.
should I be roaming around doing exorcisms?
No. And mainly
Thank
for
you.
The fact one one
I know many that would now, argue the point against you, and I always tell them, like, no, no.
I'll throw out a caveat there.
Go ahead.
Any Christian can perform an exorcism by the authority of Christ.
Sure. Absolutely.
It's an emergency.
Anybody can also invoke the name of Christ or the angels to protect them. From something, as you said earlier, all you need do is invoke that name, and you know.
I would throw in another caveat even to that one. In the scriptures, please. We read about the seven sons of Sceva, and they were Jewish exorcists, and they were watching the disciples and Christ cast out demons and spirits. And so these seven sons of Sceva, who was a high priest, they said, I adjure you in the name of Jesus to come out of this man. Now, keep in mind, they weren't believers in Christ. They were just seeing the success and thought it was like a magic formula that they could recite and this demon would come out. Well, as the gospel tells us, these seven men, these seven sons, grown men, Jewish exorcists, said that to a demoniac, a person possessed of a demon. The demon looked at the seven sons and said, Jesus I know, and Peter I know, but who are you? And it jumped using the man's body and beat these seven guys within an inch of their life because they thought it was simply a magic formula versus actual faith.
Yeah. Yeah, and it is actually like in the sacramentary and everything. It is the moment of invocation. It is the fact that you are calling upon that. Interestingly enough, we were talking a while ago briefly about mystic traditions, especially in Judaism, talking about exorcism.
Sure.
A lot of that goes straight back to Key of Solomon. The fact that Solomon supposedly had control over the djinn, the spirits there in the Middle East that are referred to frequently in the Quran. That was part of the
fire.
Part of the wisdom that was granted unto him by God and the angels. Lot of mystic tradition goes into that, as well as the tradition of man taking part in that mystical spark of creation. Through being spoken into by God and being breathed into, we uniquely share that creative spirit of word.
Sure,
so what
absolutely.
We say is, hence being able to invoke the power of God, with our words. You need to be careful how you use that. Even when talking about like, ooh, look, let's go into the mirror, into the dark and play around. Be careful what you're doing, boys and girls. Because it is more the intent behind what you're doing than what you're actually doing that causes
absolutely.
The danger. That is the opening of the door is the intent.
Yeah. And, you know, most people, you know, don't go into it with malevolent intent, and they're not really expecting to conjure up Satan. But at the same time, the speaking and the invitation, that open window, if you will, occurs. And so if any demon is in the vicinity, they're like, sweet. Now, this fool wants a little piece of me. I'll give him a big piece of me.
Now,
and then it just goes south.
Do you mind if I ask you a few honest questions?
Sure.
Okay.
Go for it.
How many exorcisms at this point would you say that you have performed?
Oh, dear. At least 200 to 300.
Oh, wow. Wow, yeah, that's a couple few a year.
It's been a good amount. And that's probably conservative, given I've done this for about 27 years.
Now, how many...
And then house cleansings is in the thousands.
And now how many, and I want to get into that in a minute, the house cleansing, because that is exorcism of a totally different type, folks, and that's where the Sacred Order of St. Michael and the Archangel actively comes in. I mean, that's the blessing in the Roman ritual that is used, or the rite of exorcism that is used for the blessing of sacred spaces, is the exorcism according to St. Michael and the Archangel, according to the Roman ritual. So very interesting that, and I definitely want to talk about that in a minute and talk about how entities come to embody homes, come to embody spaces. But how many of the hundreds of cases you've done, how many have been people that were purposefully trying to reach that necromantic other side, actively trying to conjure?
I would say because you have to keep in mind, I'm usually called in when the proverbial crap has hit the fan.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, it's everywhere by the time you get involved.
Oh yeah. I need hip waders to walk through it. I mean, it's gone sideways and south and unknown ways.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. My train of thought went to the next station. sucks getting old.
That's all right. So yeah, many people were actively trying to summon the other side?
I would say most. I don't have a specific number, but as far as possessions, oppressions go, I can almost set a watch to it. They either played with Ouija or did some other form of divination that opened up the door. And I'm also not saying, you know, everyone that plays with Ouija isn't going to get possessed and, you know, Satan's going to walk in and say howdy.
Yeah.
But it does happen as a result of Ouija.
Yeah.
Or any other form of divination for that matter, trying to gain access or answers.
Absolutely.
Or, information from the other side.
Yeah.
And it's like a radio, and with access to all channels all the time. And if someone's listening, they will come in and answer.
Yeah. And you yourself, as an exorcist, you have to take extra special precaution in your spiritual life, in your personal life. You have to keep yourself in a different kind of right. Whenever people say, like, you need to get right with God, like, there's no not being right for you. Because you never know the day that you're going to have to fast for a couple days and go into battle and go in and do something like that.
And it's not uncommon for me to get what I call scouting parties in my home.
Mm.
So before a major exorcism or major property or location cleansing, my wife and myself will see shadow people. Before this case that I did 2 weeks ago, we heard growling in the other room. My wife heard scratching on the walls. My son's therapist was here at the time, and they both kind of jumped out of their skin when they heard the growl. It was so loud. And then you'll hear voices, you'll hear whatever, and then it just stops after the case is done.
Yeah.
You know, it's like scouting party slash, hey, we're big bad, we can scare you, you don't want to do this.
Private tormentor.
I hope you run away kind of thing.
Yeah, private tormentor for the run.
And trying to intimidate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to assign this dude to show you around for a little while we deal with you.
And I've also gotten the triple scratches before some cases.
Wow.
So most of the time I'm in one of two places without fail, either on the toilet or in the shower.
Now,
it's the two most vulnerable places.
Archbishop,
and,
I'd like you to go into that a little bit. Some of the physical attack that can happen. Give people, like we were saying earlier, some of the signs of demoniac possession, some of the signs that somebody has something tormenting them and this is going on.
Yeah. My son said something to me. Repeat that question. I'm so sorry.
That's all right. The signs of possession. How do we know, like, physical attacks, like that? What can people look for in their loved ones, their friends, their local community, people that they know, that can be signs that this person is being tormented and being led down the road, being invited down the road of possession, so to speak?
Sure. So some of the physical signs that and mental signs that accompany oppression and possession is it looks most similar to schizophreniform or schizoaffective or some other psychotic disorder. But it's similar, but not the same. So in addition to having seeing, hearing things, that's what we call a psychotic episode.
All right.
A person might also see things levitating in the house. Others are seeing this. There could be physical marks, bruising, typically scratching in threes, accompanying a demonic infestation. Another thing that might happen is similar but not the same to sleep paralysis. They may be held down in bed, may experience something on their chest. I've had others have increased nightmares. They're being attacked at night, hit, punched, slapped. I mean, they may speak in an unknown language. You know, Joe Schmo from Kansas City, Kansas, fresh off the cornfield, now knows Aramaic and Greek fluently.
Yeah. Knowledge of the hidden.
Absolutely. They know everything about a person without ever hearing about it. So like a fortune teller or a soothsayer kind of. And one of the things, even in the early church, soothsayers, fortune tellers, that type, if they knew about, things in the past, most likely they were at least had an attachment that was feeding them information. And I think there are a few more, but I don't have the manual in front of me, but for the most part.
That covers it for the most part. Feats of strength that are impossible for somebody
Absolutely.
Of that size or stature, you know, the list goes on. There's all kinds of things that people can keep an eye out for, keep an ear out for. Again, that's some of that is as things progress. Some of that is after things have gone horribly awry and it's time that you call the good father here.
Yeah.
And it must be one of those hand in head moments where it's like, you know, how can you can throw the caveat out to people and they're like, yeah, okay, whatever, crazy exorcist dude. And then it happens, uh-huh. And they call you and you're like, yeah, yeah, man, I'll be there.
I saw a meme one time that it had Anthony Hopkins from the right holding out the crucifix, and it says, everyone makes fun of Catholics until they need an exorcist.
That's right. That's right. You know? And it's strange because in the last few years, I have a very good friend of mine from high school. We had a few people that went into the seminary. I went into the Catholic seminary. My buddy Trey Garland, shout out Father Trey, went into the Anglican seminary. He now wears a collar, and I don't know mm-hmm. what happened to Steve, but we had a friend, Steve, that went into the Baptist seminary. I think he ended up completing. But of all of us, I know that Trey Garland is now an active priest, and I posted an article not long ago saying that the Vatican had not only reopened the School of Demonology and Exorcism at the Vatican for priests like a good 7-8 years ago, but they were getting ready uh-huh. to this upcoming year start welcoming priests of other denominations for study.
Absolutely.
And I was like, wow, what an opening, what a statement, what a powerful moment spiritually for the world, for everybody to be able to go study. Who's at least, you know, a priest within their own faith already, all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
And
it's, you know, and so I, as superior for the Order of Exorcists in the Advent Catholic Church, my what I call my boys, they're my boys, my two demonologists and my exorcist under me. They're also reporting more infestations, more possible possessions, more definite oppressions and obsessions than they've ever experienced in the past. And they said, not only is it getting more frequent, it's getting darker. And
what do they mean by darker, Father?
More instead of, you know, you think it's Uncle Buck in the next room rattling a few dishes or something, to now you're seeing entities that have horns, they're huge, wow. They're shadowy,
full manifestations as opposed to disturbance.
Absolutely. The manifestations wow. are getting more bold and more pronounced in these years. And I personally think it's just as a result, we're nearing the end of the age.
And that's
it's coming to a head.
Well, absolutely. Not only that, but it's the fact of, like we were saying before the show, it's been a dirty secret so long. It's been a dirty secret for so long that was pushed to the wayside. And if you think about it, even just pushing that to the wayside, like I remember trying to have a conversation about the paranormal with a very good priest friend of mine who I've known since like mm-hmm. fifth, sixth grade. And he was like, well, you know, the church just doesn't believe in that. And I'm like, or doesn't teach that. And I'm like, well, that seems kind of contradictory to me.
Reread your Bible, son.
I was like, how can you not say that like spirits exist and, you know, like ghosts, like what happens to us?
Yeah.
You know, like, we're something, it's there according to your teaching. And if you're telling me that seems pretty darn contradictory to me. If we can't say the Absolutely. Ghosts exist, but that we have an afterlife.
Sure.
Like that's a noodle scratcher, Padre, and I studied at least for a year and a few years after it the same stuff you did. learning theology in the lab. So, but it is one of those that, like, the church doesn't teach about it. The church doesn't have a teaching on that, is what I was always told. Like, the church doesn't necessarily, and if the church doesn't teach on that, that pretty much means, like, just don't talk about it. Just don't talk about it. Yeah. Not that it doesn't exist, not that it isn't there. Yeah, yeah, demons, true evil, I know. Just don't talk about it. And I think that's, I think that is the active problem. Is that much, and that's the whole reason I started this show, was because these things, this forbidden knowledge, whether it be from the government, whether it be from that end, it needs to be common knowledge. This needs to be something that everybody has access to and that everybody knows about. It shouldn't be something that is only seen from a religious point of view. It shouldn't be something that is only considered viable if blessed by a couple people, you know? I think that there's the problem is that we have ignored the presence of this in our world. We have actively ignored it.
Oh, absolutely we have. And, you know, I would, you know, this might be a little bit controversial or make people gasp a little bit.
Oh, if please. They're in the personal world. Go ahead. That's what my show's all about. Yeah,
I strongly believe that the reason why Christianity in general, not just the Roman Catholic Church or the Orthodox or anyone else, have adopted this like hands-off approach, it doesn't exist, let's be a mental health therapist.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that we have gone from being a Christian body of Christ that stands on the fundamentals of the Word of God. We've watered down the scriptures so much. We have been what I call a buffet Christian, where we pick and choose what we want to believe and think we still have an authentic faith. We go after teachers and preachers that say, have your best life now. You'll be prosperous. God wants you rich and healthy and all this other BS.
Yeah.
I'll just be blunt.
Yeah.
They, instead of the Eucharist being the central focus of worship, they put garage bands up there and call it worship. Instead of the presence of the Holy Spirit with the Shekinah glory filling the temple, they fill it with mist machines and flashing strobe lights. They even teach worship arts now, quote unquote, where it's a psychological manipulation of the crowd to either hype a person up or slow them down so that they can feel really, you know, either energized or contemplative.
Yeah.
Or in the moment, absolutely. And it has devolved into this pop psychology, Christianity light, you know, like Diet Pepsi versus Pepsi. We got Diet Pepsi in the church these days.
Well, we forgot the hard-boiled good and evil. Like we and if you go back and you talk to like some Cistercian and Dominican monks, they'll tell you it never left. you know,
I agree 100%.
Yeah, like they aren't going to tell you that the evil in the world just stopped. It went away. That we prayed it away or loved it away in any way, shape, or form. It is as ever present as we are in the world. What are some of the things that people can do to recognize these entities at work in their life?
The first and foremost tactic of any demonic entity is to separate you from Christ, whether that is you attend mass or church few and fewer times, or you don't read the scriptures like you once did. You don't have that connection to God like what you once did. If they can do that, that starts the road of decay in both life and in our spiritual life. There are only two phases, stagnation and growth. So if a person isn't growing in faith, if they aren't coming closer to Christ, their faith is stagnating in one way or another. And this stagnation is capitalized on by these entities. And that's why you see teachers, people of renown, whatnot, that had an orthodox faith, all of a sudden turn sideways and getting into an aberrant faith, something that is similar to Christianity, but doesn't quite mesh up to it. They still use the same terms, but just ain't quite there. And of course, the best lie that Satan could tell is that he doesn't even exist.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because if you aren't looking for the enemy, you're already playing in his court anyway.
Yeah. That means you weren't paying attention to begin with.
Yep.
And you really do kind of have to have that mentality. You have to have the mentality of the thief is always lurking. You know,
absolutely.
Spiritually, you have to have the mentality of leaving things alone, not getting involved, with negative situations in life. See them, accept them, move on, but don't dwell on it. Don't dwell on it.
Oh, exactly.
That's what starts the stagnation. And once you stop moving, water is going to carry you somewhere. And it's probably down whatever hole
or
ramp it's going down, leading you down further.
Yep.
So,
and one of the first lies I've heard people tell me that they've told themselves is that God doesn't care.
Yeah.
That's like the prime lie that either they tell themselves or these entities tell them.
Yeah.
Because if they feel like their creator, their Abba, which actually means daddy in Aramaic, if daddy doesn't love them, then no one loves them. And they start to see themselves as worthless. They deserve what they get, kind of thing. Or they have that plus anger and resentment.
Yeah.
That goes along with that. And it creates a big wedge between them and God when God's just sitting here like, what happened?
Yeah. Yeah, well, and it's kind of the Fight Club mentality of our fathers were our models for God, and if our fathers are failures, what does that tell you about God? And I think so many people have adopted that kind of mentality.
Absolutely, where
it's like, you know, and I was speaking about this with a mutual friend of ours, Richard Spazoff, just saying that. Unfortunately, I think that most people get lost when they start praying, because with most people's concept of prayer comes an expectation. You see, it comes an expectation of return or reward for the prayer.
Mm-hmm. God's the divine vending machine.
Yeah. That's exactly how it works. I put my quarter in. You know, it was valid. It's a good quarter.
Now, give me my Snickers.
I turned the thing. What's this little tin ring, bro? This isn't what we talked about. And what we talked about popping out of here at all. And the problem is, I think that people define God by proxy that way.
Sure they do.
And they define their relationship with God via proxy that way. By thinking of him as a divine vending machine. And I use the big U word nowadays, the universe. The universe uh-huh. does not work that way. Physics does not work that way. You have to put something uh-huh. into a process. You have to push the pendulum for the pendulum to start moving. You have to put yeah. some intent behind this. And yeah. you can't pray for an answer. You can't pray for your answer, especially. The last thing you can do is enforce uh-huh. your will on the universe. Good luck with that. Give yeah. it a shot. Let me know how it works out for you.
Absolutely.
You can't enforce your will on the universe. But what you can no. do is ask for will to be revealed. You can sure. ask for guidance. You can ask for, but then you're still responsible, folks. You have to look for that answer. And you have to remember that it may yep. not be in the form that you're looking for. It may not be like in the exact box that you're looking for. You know, it may fit oddly yep. on the truck of life, but it's there. It's there. You can't lose faith over simple things like that. There is a greater plan at work in the universe that we are only a part of.
Yeah.
So what?
Well, you know, the hardest thing to pray for is like Christ prayed for in the garden: "Not my will, but yours be done."
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
And that's the perfect heart of prayer right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that infers and implies that you trust the God that you're praying to.
Yeah.
That He is benevolent and does want the best for you. And instead of saying, no, my will, not your will.
Yeah.
You know, we have to step down off the throne of our life and say, okay, not my will, but yours be done, and let it ride.
Yeah. And that's the sacrificing of ego, not the sacrificing of free will, folks. There's a difference.
Yeah.
The sacrificing of free will is what you do to let the darkness in. You don't sacrifice uh-huh. your free will working for the good side and letting light in. It doesn't work that way. You're actively using your free will to search for those good things daily. It now becomes your responsibility to care for yourself in a spiritual way, to make sure that you stay positive. Much like anybody, like we were saying earlier, getting off drugs, anybody who is recovering from an obsession possession situation mm-hmm. needs to at the least have a spiritual life regularly, talking to whatever their concept of God is. Like what are some of the things that people can do after they have cleared this kind of energy out of their life, after they have commanded it to be gone?
Basically, you know, they have to change their lifestyle, behaviors, sometimes even their beliefs, to switch it to a purity. You know, a lot of times we as humans, We tend to see or not see the obvious solutions in front of us. So for drug use, for instance, it's an easy reference. Everyone can understand it.
Sure.
A person that did pharmakeia, did sorcery, a renunciation of that activity would have to occur to cut the spiritual cord. And confession and penance would have to be done as a result of that, to find mercy, grace, and to work through some of that stuff that they created to uncreate it, so that it no longer has a foothold in their life. If that means NAAA, Bill Diagnosis Anonymous, something like that.
Yeah.
Or even Celebrate Recovery, other Christian-based things, or other religion-based abstinence and sobriety, peer support kind of stuff, so that they're not being the fox that watches the hen house, so to speak.
Yeah.
So that they have accountability structures in their life. They have to stop doing what got them in trouble in the first place. Unfortunately, us humans, we're really bad at learning lessons sometimes. And like the scripture says, it's like a dog that returns to its vomit. And so, like, for the people I've helped, I say, get into church. Are you Catholic? Great. Go to Mass. Are you a regular Christian? Great. Go to church. Get into discipleship. Start building your spiritual life up. Change stuff up. Don't keep doing the same things because you're going to keep inviting the same things in.
Yeah.
And it's just a matter of changing the lifestyle to reflect what you want instead of returning to the vomit, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't express that better. That's a great way to put that. And that's what we all have to do. We all have to, give up our negative pattern of thinking. We talk about it on this show all the time, how the brain learns more from negative reinforcement than anything else. It's a survival instinctual thing. You hear about how dangerous fire is, but you don't learn anything till you touch fire. And then suddenly you remember for your entire life, dude, I don't want to get near that. That first experience sucked, that negative reinforcement is automatically like shifted your entire being. And it's what keeps us on our heels. It's what keeps us weak. It takes only a short rewiring to learn to see positive things whenever you look around, to learn to see positive activity in your life and in the world around you, to think positively, to try and spread that to at least a couple people a day. Tell a couple strangers a day that you see, like, hey, nice shirt. You'd be surprised. Mm-hmm. It may be the only nice thing they hear from anybody all day. Like, they may be out for their lunch break and they absolutely hate their job and don't like anybody at their office, but they had somebody that said something nice that day. We really do have to be the spiritual shepherd, so to speak, to bring goodness around. And have to start, like you said, repatterning our lives, repatterning our behaviors, trying to be more Christ-like, more Buddha-like, more like Allah, what have you. I'm someone that's like, whatever you religion philosophy you follow, follow it well, As long as you are not causing harm to anybody in the world, but you've got to have a spiritual depth to you. You've got to understand the fact that there is hard good, hard evil, and that you need to keep your eyes out for it. So, before we leave here, tell us a little bit about your book, Walking with Ghosts, an exorcist memoir of the paranormal, which will be available here on the Dudes and Beer store, dudesandbeer.com/store. You can get it on Amazon, all that kind of stuff. Tell us what led you to write that book.
Well, my book really started as a diary, kind of a family dog diary slash log about the paranormal events that we experienced. As I was telling you earlier, I'm actually a very odd exorcist, if you will, odd bishop, because I've also had the sight ever since I was 4. And so it's not something, I'm not into going into graveyards at night and summoning the dead or something.
Yeah.
I just see, hear, and know. But that knowing that knowledge has been a part of the family lineage going back generations. My mom, actually, my mom's seen more than I have, even as an exorcist, so that's saying something. Then even my grandmother, my grandmother's mother, all the way back, as well as on my dad's side, going way back. Two stories from both grandmothers, my mom's mom and my dad's mom. Just given a brief example, it was about 1918. My grandmother on my mom's side, she was sleeping with my great grandmother in the bed. My great grandmother heard my grandmother choking, or something, as she said, told me it was like a choking slash rustling around. And so my great grandmother turned over and saw this black mass choking out my grandmother.
Oh, wow.
And my grandmother was 4, 5, right in that age range. And my great-grandmother, as it's reported, was able to grab the black shadow entity and threw it against the far wall, and it slid down into the floorboards with a screech.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That was one of my first stories after all my early childhood experiences that I heard from my grandmother. I was like, oh, well, that's nice.
Yeah.
And,
family traditions, huh?
Then my dad, a light story to tell over dinner.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then my dad's mom, she was walking along the, levees down in California. So I grew up in California, and, she saw a casket. She didn't say if it was a vision or she actually saw a casket rising out of the water in the Delta, and the casket opened and it was her dad inside the casket. And she ran home to tell my great grandmother about it. So my great grandmother also must have had the gift as well, because when my grandmother told my great grandmother about it, she said, don't tell your dad, but in a couple of days, he'll probably die. And it was no more than 2 days later that he passed away suddenly from a heart attack.
Oh, wow.
And so these kind of things sound outlandish to most normal folk. But for me, it was and was a part of my early childhood experience and continues to be. And so I wrote a diary, basically telling family stories, giving my own insights. I even talk about an abduction experience that I had at 4 years old myself with my mom, dad, and grandmother. We all saw these craft. It was a crazy experience. I wrote about it in the book. Long story short, entity called to me. I went someplace else and they showed me things and told me things. And then I remember telling my mom the next day, getting out of bed, I talked to a silver robot guy. And the details, I won't bore you with them now, but they were all wrote down in the book.
Wow. So,
it's like I said, I'm a very, I guess, eclectic kind of person. I've seen and experienced what most probably will never experience. And actually, I hope that they don't. Because it could, luckily for me, it reinforced my calling, but it could easily drive a person to madness as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And thank you so much for what you do, for the vocation that you have chosen, for the call that you have answered to be an exorcist, to be a demonologist, to take on not only this research, but this chosen field of spiritual warfare. Thank you so much for coming on the show tonight, sharing your experience.
You're very welcome.
Answering questions that I know whenever I told people, like, hey, I'm having an exorcist on, they're like, ooh, ask this. so I had a list of a few things.
Yeah,
but
you don't get the opportunity to much.
But, and that's what I was going to say. Your opportunity is always here. Anytime that you would like to do an episode, anytime that you would like to talk about any spiritual topic that you want, that is exactly what Dudes and Beer is here for, is to have the hard conversations that we should be having as a society, to delve into this world of unknown knowledge and make it known to people.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
well, maybe next time I'll talk in depth about my abduction and the research I've done on top of that, as well as talking to three insiders.
Well, let's definitely chat about that, because I would love to have you on to talk about that as well. So please do hold the line just a moment as we end this episode tonight. Once again, thank you so much for everything that you do. Once again, everybody, James Cloud, demonologist, exorcist, Archbishop of the Northwest Advent International Catholic Church, and exorcist at the Sacred Order of St. Michael the Archangel, author of Walking with Ghosts, an Exorcist Memoir of the Paranormal. Thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. Please do hold the line. Thank you for everyone that's been tuning in these many, many episodes. We are now at almost 220. And it is because of all you folks that we have these great guests, that we get in these great conversations. Until next time, everybody, check us out online, dudesandbeer.com. Remember, if you can't be good at it. Take care of yourselves.
Thanks
and each other.
Bye-bye. Dudes and Beer Podcast. To listen to our audio streams or chat with us live, download the official Dudes and Beer app for Android and iDevices, available on Google Play and iTunes markets. For more episodes, content, and information, visit us online at dudesandbeer.com. You can also find our episodes on Breach.tv, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Dudes and Beer is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more about our sponsors and other podcasts on this network, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com. Thanks for listening, everybody, and until next time, drink responsibly.